Are you stressed out? Well, that's not necessarily a bad thing, according to our guest this hour, and we will find out how we can use our stress to our advantage. I'm Joy Cardine. We will talk this hour with a clinical psychologist about the benefits of stress, its effects on our short and long-term health, and how to build resiliency in the future to stressful situations. And I want to know if you can point to a time when stress has helped or you think hurt you. How do you respond to the stress of deadline pressure? Sometimes I think it helps me get things done if I have that deadline and get it done well, too. What do you do to control the amount of stress in your life? And how's that working for you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest this hour is Ian Robertson. He is a clinical psychologist, the T. Boone Pickens Distinguished Research Scientist at the University of Texas in Dallas. He is co-director of the Global Brain Health Institute. He is also the author of 10 scientific books and 3 books for the general reader. His latest is The Stress Test: How Pressure Can Make You Stronger and Sharper. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for being with us. So what is stress?
Stress is the condition where you feel that the demands being made on you exceed your ability to cope with them. And the resulting emotion is anxiety and all the symptoms that go with that.
And you call stress a double-edged sword. Explain why it's double-edged.
So our brain has a number of chemical messengers, neurotransmitters in it, which all have this interesting feature that they have a what's called an inverted U-shaped function. Now, what do I mean by that? What I mean is that if there's too little of that neurotransmitter, your brain underperforms, and if there's too much of it, your brain underperforms. But there's a sweet spot in the middle, kind of Goldilocks zone, where you've got optimal performance. And this was first discovered in 1908 in Yale, in fact, with mice. They found there was an optimal level of demand or arousal in our brain where we perform at our best. And it turns out one of the critical chemical messengers is norepinephrine, which is part of the fight or flight system of our brain and our body. So norepinephrine comes from epinephrine, from the general arousal response we get when we're frightened or we're aroused. And that in the brain, the corresponding neurotransmitter is norepinephrine. And so sometimes if we are very understimulated and under-challenged, our brain can be short of norepinephrine. And similarly, if we're over, too many demands are being made on us and we can't cope with them, there can be too much. And in both of these conditions, the different parts of our brain don't communicate with each other as efficiently as they do when we're in this sweet spot of just having the right amount. And certain types and certain amounts of stress actually serve to push us up into that sweet spot so that we actually perform better. And this plays out in our cognitive function, it plays out in our emotional life, and it even plays out in our ability to tolerate pain and to cope with painful disability.
Yeah. We'll get into some more in more detail of some of these benefits, the details of these benefits. But we do kind of have stress gets a bad rap, I think you're saying, and that stress, way too much of it isn't good. But for the most part, it's not so bad.
Well, so just like the brain's chemical messengers, there's a too much is bad and too little is bad. Too much stress, too many demands, too much of a discrepancy between what's being asked of us and what we can do is actually is not good for us in the long term. But actually, a certain amount of stress, moderate amounts of stress, actually can actually benefit us in a number of different ways. And it turns out that it's very much linked to whether we benefit from stress and get that side of the sword, or whether we suffer from it and get that side of the sword, depend a lot on how we approach stress, on how we the jargon is how we appraise it, how we our attitudes to stress, how we mentally frame it. There was a very famous experiment done in Vancouver in Canada in the 1970s, where they got a young female research assistant to stand on this very scary bridge above a 400-foot ravine that swayed as people walked across. And she stopped young men approaching and asked them if they would write a short story for a minute or two. And then she did the same experiment on a bridge upstream that was a very fixed, non-swaying, non-scary bridge. And what she found was that the stories of the young men on the swaying bridge were packed with sexual content, which was not the case for the other bridge. Now, why was that?
Well, why was that?
Why was that, you might well ask. Well, think about it. You're standing on that swaying bridge. Your heart is racing. Your mouth is dry. Your stomach is clenched. And your skin is sweaty. And so your brain is trying to figure out what emotion you're having. Now, if you think about it, these are the symptoms of, we might say, anxiety, because we're talking about stress now, but they're also the symptoms of excitement, including sexual excitement. And so our brains all the time are trying to figure out what our emotions are by interpreting these very non-specific emotional arousal symptoms that are all symptoms of the activation of the autonomic sympathetic branch of the autonomic nervous system, which is a general purpose fight or flight system that's common to all a number of different emotions, including anxiety, excitement, and also anger. And the way we figure out what emotion we are having is by our brain interpreting these non-specific arousal symptoms, of which norepinephrine is part of, and judging it in terms of context. So the young men on the bridge, they found their heart racing and their stomachs clenched and their mouths dry, but it was in the context of talking to an attractive young woman, and so they interpreted that as being excitement, not anxiety. And so that sexual excitement and attraction, they bled into their story. And that's a general...
I'm sorry to interrupt, but you you told a similar story on a YouTube that I thought really was fascinating. Let's say that you have to make an important speech or presentation in front of a group of people, and you are anxious about this, and your mouth's getting dry, you might be sweating, your heart's racing a little bit because you're nervous, you're anxious, you're stressed out, you want to do a good job. Mentioned an experiment where if you say, I am anxious about this speech I have to give, you're probably going to do a crummy job. But if you say, I'm excited by this speech and I'm excited that I'm going to have this challenge, that you will do better.
Yeah, that's a very fantastic experiment done by a colleague called Alison Brooks in Philadelphia. And what was remarkable there was that the performance on some quite challenging tasks, for instance, having to perform math in front of a critical audience and also having to perform karaoke in front of that audience. but just saying the three words, I feel excited, before that, allowed the brain to change the context for the beating heart and the clenching stomach and turn like magic, or like jiu-jitsu, turned one emotion, anxiety or fear, into another one, which was excitement. And you got actually better performance as a result of just these three words. And that's an example of switching our mind into what's called a challenge mindset as opposed to a threat mindset. And it's actually remarkably easy for us to do that, for us to control the software of our brain and therefore actually control our brain's chemistry. And so what happens when you say, I feel excited, you're putting yourself into a frame of mind where you're seeing an opportunity to achieve a goal. or to get a reward, that is the satisfaction of doing this, versus a threat mindset where you're anticipating a punishment and anticipating negative things, humiliation or embarrassment or failure. And what the challenge mindset does is it pulls you back from that mountain where too much or too little makes you underperform, pulls you back to the top of that mountain where you get the sweet spot of performance. And we can do this. I do this all the time. A difficult meeting, even a difficult conversation in my personal life, I try and approach that as a challenge, and I say, you know, here's an opportunity. I feel excited. This beating heart is me being excited to have a chance to overcome this challenge rather than being frightened by the possibility of what's going to happen.
We are talking with Ian Robertson. He is a clinical psychologist and the author of The Stress Test, How Pressure Can Make You Stronger and Sharper. And we're talking about stress and the benefits of moderate levels of stress and how we might even change our response to stress. And we're welcoming your questions for him, and we're welcoming your own experiences. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do you think stress hurts you or helps you? Do you respond well to the stress of deadline pressure? Why or why not? Let us know about you and stress. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. So are you under a lot of pressure? How do you deal with pressure or stress? We are talking about stress and how to deal with it and the benefits of it with Ian Robertson, who is the author of The Stress Test, How Pressure Can Make You Stronger and Sharper. Is this your experience with stress? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We have Chris on Facebook who says that sometimes she works better under pressure, but she adds that there are moments when it almost broke me. I can have some levels as long as I'm aware that I have support to help me with it, but if I'm on my own and I don't know how to handle the situation, I don't think I've had a good outcome. Ian Robertson, you can talk a little bit more about, finding that sweet spot. Can we? Do we have control over that?
We never have. Well, we seldom have complete control. And, you know, when severe stress can really push our backs to the wall sometimes, and I don't want to be a Pollyanna about this and say, oh, look, it's all stress is good. Of course, it's not. And indeed, sometimes we have to accept defeat. We have to accept embarrassment. We have to accept humiliation. We all go through down periods in our life where there's no alternative but to, if you like, retreat and to avoid and to go into a mindset that's not anything but the challenge mindset. And if we manage to do that, while not losing track of our ability to monitor and to control our emotions, we can actually use these periods of low periods of defeat as opportunities for new insights and for new directions that we might take and for new goals to emerge. Why do I say that? Well, the brain, we're stuck caught between two opposite impulses in the brain, one to do with approach and going forward and anticipating rewards, and that's the challenge mindset. And the other is the avoidance mindset, or the threat mindset, which is to do with anticipating punishments and retreating from them. Now, these are the, if you like, the positive and the negatives, but each one of these systems has also got a negative to it and a positive. So, for instance, in the when we're in the approach mindset, and this is more linked to the left frontal part of the brain, we can sometimes get too many successes, too much power. We can end up being too much focused on rewards, and we can get into extreme forms of behavior like gambling addiction or alcohol addiction or sex addiction or power addiction. We can get into these frames of mind where we are stuck in the going forward for rewards. And that's the negative side of that frame of mind. On the other side, we can get, obviously, in the avoidance threat mindset, we can become paralyzed with anxiety, feel overwhelmed by threat, feel pessimistic about doing anything about it. But some of the positive of that frame of mind are where we have more self-awareness, we have more empathy, and also we can have, under certain circumstances, more creativity.
Yeah, I want to interrupt a bit because Chris was saying that, you know, sometimes she works better under pressure, but sometimes she does not. How can we build resiliency to help in future stressful situations?
We can do this by anticipating the next stressful situation we're going to have. So I imagine all of us today can think of something in the next month that we're kind of dreading, we're not looking forward to, some interaction, some meeting, some presentation, some conversation we have to have. And where we get that, with me, I get this feeling of my stomach clenching up. That's where I feel anxiety. So if we can actually practice, imagine ourselves into that situation, and we can do a number of things. We have to really create the stress that we anticipate feeling. We have to actually think ourselves into the situation where our heart is beating faster, we're feeling our mouth dry, we're feeling that sweatiness, we're feeling the anxiety. And what we can do then is we can, first of all, try and get ourselves into the challenge mindset by saying, this is excitement as much as it's anxiety, but you can also control the chemistry of your brain by breathing. So if you take a long, slow breath in and out, if you do that 5 times, you actually change the amount of norepinephrine in your brain. You change the chemistry of your brain if you breathe slowly in a relaxed fashion like that, because the part of the brain producing the norepinephrine is sensitive to the amount of carbon dioxide in your blood. So you can practice in advance controlling the chemistry of your brain just as a drug would control it. But you can do it naturally with your own breathing. You can also do it with your own posture. If you sit up straight or stand up straight, if you can trick your brain into thinking you feel confident, you will actually create that confidence in your brain. And also a final tip is if you actually gently squeeze your right hand for 3/4 of a minute and then release it for a quarter and then repeat that, you're actually giving a little boost to the left frontal lobe of your brain and giving a little tiny bit of help to this going on, going forward, anticipating a challenge rather than a threat mindset.
And I saw that on your website. Please repeat that hand exercise again. And why do we think that affects our stress level or our response to it anyway?
So it's because of our brain having these two tendencies. The left frontal part of our brain tending to be the more optimistic, go-forward, goal-anticipating system network called the approach system or the challenge system. And the right half of our brain is more to do with withdrawal, anticipating threat, and punishment. And these two parts of the brain are in competition with each other. They're each trying to inhibit each other. So we can help and sometimes when we're in a very stressed state, we have a dominance of the right half of the brain, which is actually inhibiting our capacity to go forward, to anticipate goals, to be in that challenge frame of mind. So we need that diminished, inhibited left system, left network of our brain needs a bit of help. And we can do that help by our posture, by our breathing, and also by squeezing our right hand. Squeezing our right hand gently, because the left part of the half of the brain controls the right hand, that activation gives a little bit of additional activation to the left frontal part of the brain and helps it overcome some of the inhibition from the dominant avoidance right hemisphere network that's to do with retreat from threat. So we can by posture, by moving one side of our body rather than the other, by breathing to control our norepinephrine levels, and by interpreting these symptoms of arousal as excitement rather than as anxiety, if we do these things and practice them in advance while we're visualizing the stressful situation before we're actually in it, then we'll be more likely to be, when we're actually in the stressful situation, to cope better and to behave better and to feel good about ourselves, about how we've behaved in that stressful situation, because our minds will be clearer, because we've created the sweet spot or pushed ourselves a little nearer the sweet spot of performance. And so we're less likely to lose our temper, less likely maybe to show extreme emotion, less likely to blurt out something that we might regret saying, less likely to seize up, less likely to flee a stressful situation. We're more likely to behave well when we do these things. And that builds up resilience. It's all a set of quite small set of small habits that if we practice and practice in advance, will allow us to cope better with stressful situations when we actually face them.
We are talking with Ian Robertson. He is the author of The Stress Test, How Pressure Can Make You Stronger and Sharper. We're welcoming your questions for him and your own experiences when it comes to dealing with stress, and wondering if you feel stress sometimes is helpful for you, or has it been harmful? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Daniel in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, how you doing, Joy?
Very good. What is your experience with stress?
Well, from my Army days, I'm hearing a lot of language is very similar to things the Army developed and tried to implement post-World War II, where they define good training as tough, realistic training where success is possible but not guaranteed. And then, you know, non-commissioned officers, sergeants in the military are often responsible for getting their troops excited prior to training, prior to these challenges, motivating them to succeed. And I've been in good organizations like that, and I've been in bad organizations where punishments for failures took away the excitement of the challenge. And those organizations, when, you know, deployed, would have a much harder time being successful than the previous one. And also, I'm a big fan of the meditation stressful problem-solving piece. I think it's very important. And I think people look at military stuff and think, well, you know, I work in an office or in a hospital. That doesn't apply to me. But if the most extreme stress you've faced is, you know, presenting to a boardroom or being in the emergency room and treating a patient, then that is your extreme right. And I think that problem-solving skill set applies across the board.
Well, I'm glad you called, Daniel, because when you first brought up your military training, I started thinking about SEAL training and how demanding that is. And is that what you mean in terms of how the Army trains people?
Well, yeah, just the way you structure training is similar to the way that your guest is talking about, you know, preparing yourself by experiencing stress. If you make it too easy, or if it becomes easy because you're punished for failing, then you're not actually prepared to accomplish that task when you experience it in real life, so to speak. But if it's challenging, if success is not guaranteed, and you're excited about it, you're more likely to accomplish that task and retain that quick, excited problem-solving capabilities, you know, when you're deployed and, you know, you experience this stuff in real life.
A reaction, Ian?
I think Daniel put it absolutely beautifully. And I think that sometimes science catches up with practice. And I think you're absolutely right that the military training and indeed the SEER, the survival SEER training in San Diego is very much based on that of deliberately creating quite severe stress but in a controlled way, thereby training people to cope with it and to feel good about coping with it, and thereby that's where you get resilience. And the evidence is that people, young adults who have very sheltered lives, who have never experienced or have experienced very little adversity in their past lives, end up emotionally much more vulnerable than young adults who in their past lives have had moderate levels of adversity. Severe adversity is another matter, but moderate levels of adversity make people more emotionally tough and robust, more able to persist and problem solve in exactly the way that Daniel was saying, but over a lifetime rather than just over a military training. And what's more, if these people who have suffered moderate levels of adversity in their lives, if they end up with a disability like low back pain, they're much less likely to be on chronic pain-killing medication, they're less likely to be chronically unemployed, and they're going to be much less disabled than people with the same pathology but who have never had any or had very little adversity in their past lives. So adversity, stress, properly approached, can toughen us just the way the military toughen and improve the performance of their people by training them in the way that Daniel describes.
When Daniel brought up that organizations that, I don't know, might fire you if you fail at a project, take all excitement out of that challenge and turn it into a stressful, anxious situation. So companies could take a lesson from the stress test.
Yes, I mean, fear is a very blunt weapon. And if you live in a fear-filled, if you work in a fear-filled organization where it's all about being let go or, you know, failing, being told you're failing to meet targets, etc., what that does is it just makes all your employees' brains switch into avoidance, threat, punishment, anticipation mode. And that has a number of effects. That means their ability to conceive of and follow through in goals is diminished, because that avoidance network that's dominating in the left frontal part of their brain is inhibiting the optimistic, goal-achieving, attentionally focused networks of the brain, which every employer needs to be in working well in order to get goals achieved of their company. And the other thing to say about when you're stuck in this fear mode, this avoidance mode, is your memory systems are biased. So in that frame of mind, it's very hard even for your brain to remember past good things. There's a bias of the memory towards picking up past episodes of previous failure and previous anxiety, and similarly of only noticing signs of threat ahead. So what that fear-based system does is to build an overcautious set of brains in a company, a set of brains that are going to be blind to entrepreneurial opportunity, to new opportunities, are going to be less cognitively flexible and less able to set goals for themselves. So I think, again, Daniel made a very, very good point in describing a culture that can actually systematically change the brains of hundreds or thousands of people working for it in such a way to actually deplete their mental functions.
Daniel, thank you so much for the call. Moving next to Heather in Milwaukee. Hi, Heather.
Hello. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. I just wanted to share that you're spot on with the breathing. I've gotten in stressful situations, and the first thing that happens is everything tightens in your body, and I do take those five breaths, and I can tell you it gives you a whole different frame of dealing with the stress. Also, the posture. I can't stress the posture enough. I've actually gone so far as to been on a call at work where I can tell that there's a lot of hostility in the call and the tone. And to make sure that I maintain my professionalism, I've stood up on the call. And it takes a whole different dimension to your physical part of your body, but it also rejuvenates your body, your mind, to be able to handle that conversation in a less stressful, impulsive, I want to say something but I know I probably shouldn't say it type of situation. So You're spot on with those suggestions. I haven't done the hand one. I am going to try that one. That's another good idea. And, you know, the breathing helps even in one of those impulsive, stressful situations that you can't predict, that you can't plan for. You get the call, you know, Heather, can you come into my office, or can you report to this meeting? And your body just goes into a stressful situation.
Okay. Well, Heather, I'm gonna stand up next time I'm talking to a, you know, a politician who's giving me a hard time.
It really works. I did that, and people would walk by my office and go, "Why are you standing?" After I got off the call, and I'm like, "Because I was in a very hostile conversation." And breathing on your way to an office or breathing on your way to a meeting helps.
All right. Thank you for sharing that. There's some real life examples of how she used this. Ian, what do you say?
Yeah, Heather, that's a fantastic description. But you know what? I can be a hot-headed person myself sometimes. The thing about these things, it's remembering to do them at the time. But your idea of actually standing up to take that difficult call, I'm going to do that myself. You've given me a tip. It never occurred to me that you could actually stand up. And the other thing is about taking these five deep, long, slow breaths. Just to remember to do that when you're caught unawares by someone maybe unexpectedly speaking in an aggressive fashion to you, or some unanticipated situation. To just have at your fingertips well-practiced strategies, like the breathing and the posture and the hand clenching, can just give your brain, apart from anything else, you can give your brain that 10 seconds to actually short-circuit the impulsive response that you might otherwise give and save you an awful lot of trouble. So thanks for that. I'm going to follow up the standing up tip myself next time I get a difficult call.
I love it. Thank you so much, Heather. Well, briefly before we need to take a break, I try to breathe, and a lot of people meditate, and a lot of people go to yoga class, and they try to relax. They try to reduce their stress levels that way. I guess I'm wondering, I mean, you don't want to reduce it too much, though?
Well, just remember that mountain, if you like, the inverted U-shape. Just remember that mountain and which side of the mountain you're on. If you're on the low side, if you're maybe feeling jaded, maybe feeling a bit understimulated, unmotivated, bored, then, yeah, maybe doing the breathing and relaxing yourself even more is probably not what you need. But if you're on the other side of the mountain where you're just feeling very pressured and very stressed, actually the breathing and the yoga and mindfulness methods can be a wonderful way of pulling you back up that side of the mountain to near the top. So it's all about becoming more aware of where our bodies and brains are. That's that state of arousal. And to realize that we're not always aiming for the flat, lying in our back, totally relaxed state. No, we don't want that. We need a lot of it. That level, that sweet spot varies depending on what we're doing. And if we're on vacation, sure, we want a few days of just very low arousal with the sweet spot quite far back. And then if we're preparing for an interview for a job, or we're going for a very difficult presentation to the board of our company, we need to be much further along there. We need to be quite aroused. And our sweet spot there will be quite different than it was on vacation. So, but the critical thing, Joy, is for us to realize how much control we have, not just of our minds, but of actually the physical chemistry and functioning of our brains, and therefore of our bodies. We have enormous control if we just learn these habits. But a lot of the time, we kind of feel out of control, and that's because we haven't practiced many of these quite simple habits enough so that we can actually use them at the times that count.
We are talking with Ian Robertson. He's a clinical psychologist. He is the author of many books. His latest is The Stress Test: How Pressure Can Make You Stronger and Sharper. And we wonder if stress or pressure helps you, or what is your experience with stress and coping with stress? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network. So are you stressed out? Have you managed to find this sweet spot of stress where it's just right, where moderate levels of stress actually improve your performance? We are talking about the benefits of moderate levels of stress with our guest, who is a clinical psychologist, Ian Robertson. He is also the author of The Stress Test, How Pressure Can Make You Stronger and Sharper. And we are talking about some exercises that help us deal with stress and can build resiliency to help in future stressful situations. And we've had busy lines all hour, and now we do have an open line for you if you'd like to join in to describe how a stressful situation that you've had and how you dealt with it. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Sonia in Central Wisconsin is with us next. Hello.
Hello.
Go ahead, please.
I'm calling. Similar to unfortunate anxiety of experience, where existence lies consciousness awakes. Living requires feeling. Anxieties are unavoidable face necessities. So responsive fight or flight reactions sustain life.
I'm sorry, Sonia, I'm not sure. So are you following this, Ian?
No, I'm sorry. I didn't quite get that, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I mean, I think she was talking a bit, but I was confused. I thought she wanted to say that that this anxiety can be beneficial. I'm wondering if you think anxiety is that the same as stress?
Well, anxiety is the emotional response to feeling stress. Feeling stress is where the demands you feel you can't cope with the demands being made on you. And anxiety is a response. Anxiety can be caused by other things as well. I mean, some drugs can cause anxiety. So the anxiety is a disorder that can be caused by a number of different things, one of which is extreme stress. And, you know, chronic anxiety is a very, very painful and troubling and difficult condition that often needs medical help. So I'm talking here about everyday stress rather than, clinical condition that someone might have. But nevertheless, we do, even when we're feeling very anxious, there are little things we can do to get some control, maybe not complete control, over how anxious we feel. And certainly the breathing is a very, very important part of that, because the anxiety is part of the anxiety is the norepinephrine in the brain, which is very much affected by our breathing and our posture and our mental set. But severe anxiety and chronic anxiety is not something that you can easily just wave a magic wand and do something about. That's a very troubling and a very painful condition to have if it's long lasting and needs a number of different approaches to it.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Sonia, it was hard to follow on the telephone line, but apparently she told Brianne Chasso, our producer, that she uses the anxiety or the stress to her benefit when playing a musical instrument in performances. So I would assume that is along the lines of the stress test, right?
Oh, absolutely. And then, Tiger Woods, the golfer, he says that The day I'm not anxious when I go out in the course is the day I give up. And most sporting and musical performers actually need that. They need that sense of feeling anxious and stressed to push their brain up into that sweet spot of performance. And most top performers are really masters of mind control. And the thing is that they've done that not because they're born that way, because they've learned skills of understanding their own minds and their own brain and learning to control them and use the energy of stress. Because, you know, anxiety is a kind of energy, and it's a question of harnessing it for good or for ill, and in this case, for good. What was said there is absolutely right. Some people really can't perform well if they don't feel that edge of anxiety.
Thank you, Sonia, for the call. A listener who couldn't stay with us wants to know if stress can make older people, stronger and smarter, or is this just for younger people? What about age? Does it matter?
What a great question. Thank you for that. Because it turns out that older people over 70 whose memory is a bit fragile. They're not suffering from dementia, but their memory is not working terribly well. And if that happens, then these people are more at risk of their memory further declining. But if people in that situation have moderately stressful life events over the next couple of years, their memory will not decline to the same degree as people that have no stress during that period, or very little. Now, what do I mean by moderately stressful events? I mean things like serious illness of a partner or a spouse. Stroke, for instance, or cancer would be serious illness. Conflict with family or neighbours. These kinds of, they're quite bad stressors, but they're not the death of a partner or spouse, but serious illness of a partner or spouse seems to produce a level of stress that actually benefits the brains of these older people and keeps them more mentally agile and keeps their memory at a higher level than would be the case if they were not suffering that stress. And that's because perhaps many of these people, their brains are being rather under-challenged and under-stimulated, too few demands being made on them, which means that in the mountain we're talking about, they're down the left side of the mountain with under-stimulation. Their brain is not producing enough norepinephrine, but when these moderately stressful events, unpleasant events, but nevertheless moderately stressful events happen, it causes the brain to produce more norepinephrine and pushes them up to that sweet spot of performance where they perform better. And norepinephrine in moderate levels has remarkable properties because it actually helps new brain connections and new brain cells generate as well. So the answer is for older people, for sure, moderate levels of stress can have very positive effects in the same way that moderate level stress can have on younger people as well.
Mary in Milwaukee is with us now. Hello, Mary.
Good morning.
Yes, go ahead, Mary.
Yes, I wanted to ask the doctor about a long-term stress. I was in a long-term domestic situation that was very stressful, and I went into therapy for years, but eventually found someone who used EMDR because I really, as much as I tried to use the techniques that you've been talking about, was just unable to really cope on my own. And I'm just, you know, for people who can't, as you were saying, think in the moment or are in a fear-based situation for long periods of time, is that something that you recommend or you're familiar with?
What does EMDR mean, Mary?
Well, I wish it's an acronym for a treatment that's used. It's a tapping, or you can use sounds that are with ear pods that are put in your ear, and the therapist works with you as you work through traumatic situations or difficult situations, stressful situations that come to you when you're in treatment.
Well, if somebody has been through a terrible domestic situation or has a PTSD, I guess it's a treatment for that, but Dr. Robertson.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I am familiar with it. I have not practiced it, but I know that some people do find it helpful. I'm talking here about normal levels of human life stress. I'm not talking about clinical conditions like PTSD or chronic anxiety. So in these situations, you know, professionals do have a number of techniques, some of which are very effective. So I'm totally happy to accept that that was very, very helpful for you in that very awful situation you were in.
Yeah. And again, as you mentioned, these various techniques are just for moderate stress, not somebody that's gone through something very severe.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mary. Let's go next to Jean in Madison. Hi, Jean.
Good morning. So I just, I know that yoga has a lot of benefits that are well known. I wanted to evangelize for the practice of Tai Chi as well, because it incorporates so much of what you guys are talking about. The mindfulness, you're focusing on learning the form and the posture and the breathing. And the fact that it's moving, I think it translates more into your daily life more easily than some other things. And, yeah, there's a lot of focus. You're constantly aware of where your body is and how you're using your muscles and relaxing every single muscle that doesn't have to be used any more than it has to be used.
Thank you, Jean. Any comments or on Tai Chi, Ian?
I think Jean's absolutely right. I do think that if you can find a natural way of doing all these habits or techniques that I'm talking about that's also enjoyable, like Tai Chi, that is just fantastic. So, and there's also, as you said, Jean, the movement aspect of that, and movement will have a whole lot of other set of effects on the brain. So I totally buy that and would support you in your evangelization for Tai Chi for sure.
We have just a minute to go. Any final tips that you'd like to leave us with so we can learn to leverage our stress so it benefits us?
I just finished with this one, and that is, we have enormous potential control over the chemistry and physical structure of our brains and therefore of our minds. But we have to believe that we can have that control. And so what we have to do is not suffer from the curse of what I call the curse of genetic fatalism, the feeling that it's all chemical processes over which they're out of my control and therefore I can't do it. We all have potential control, but we have to believe we have that control. If we believe we have it, there's a whole range of potential methods to help us gain that control.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Ian Robertson is a clinical psychologist. He is with the University of Texas in Dallas, co-director of the Global Brain Institute, Global Brain Health Institute, and author of many books. His latest is The Stress Test: How Pressure Can Make You Stronger and Sharper. And there's more information on his website, which is linked to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So thanks to Brianne Shasso for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. Tomorrow at this time, Kate Archer and Kent will be in for me, and she will be talking with a guest on retirement and getting the most out of retirement. That's coming up tomorrow at this time. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.